Board of Commissioners meeting for the Oakland Housing Authority on September 28th, 2020. May we all begin, please, with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance
to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God,
indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
Have roll call, please.
Good evening, commissioners. I'll take the roll call. Chair Hartwig?
Present.
Vice Chair Griffith? Commissioner Castillo?
Present.
Commissioner Castillo?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
A little bit better now. Thank you.
Okay.
Commissioner Todorich?
Present.
Commissioner Wright?
Present.
Oh, I hear you. Thank you. Commissioner Montgomery? Commissioner Montgomery? Commissioner Jung Lee?
Present.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have a motion, please, to approve last month's minutes?
So move. It's Commissioner Griffith.
Second, Jung Lee.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Moving on to item four, old or unfinished business.
There's none, Chair.
We have none. Are there any modifications to the agenda?
Staff have none, sir.
I have none, and no one else has any, so we're now moving on to new business, item A.
Commissioners, item A is an informational presentation on the Oakland Housing Authority annual Section 3 report for fiscal year 2020. This item is being presented this evening to inform you as our commission of the activities that the Housing Authority takes part in to ensure that we provide access to recipients of HUD-funded housing programs, as well as local businesses who meet eligibility criteria for Section 3. We have always considered this a very important part of the Housing Authority's effort to make sure that the funds issued nationally reach all parts of the community that we serve here in Oakland, both at the individual level for residents to provide them opportunities for employment and career beginnings, as well as for businesses that enter into many of our workforce development programs to establish themselves as micro enterprises and to see if they have an opportunity to contract using these HUD funds. For our presentation this evening, which will include a PowerPoint, we have the stellar team from our Contracts Compliance and General Services Department, as well as our Acting Director of Family Community Services. To introduce that team, please welcome Daniel Mermelstein, Manager of CCGS. Mr. Mermelstein?
Yes, good evening, and welcome to the Section 3 program presentation. My name is Daniel Mermelstein, and I'm the Contracts, Compliance, and General Services Manager. I would first like to start out by saying that the creation of the presentation has been an enlightening experience, and there will be many enhancements to our program within the next year to make it even better. So what is Section 3? Section 3 is a federal law that requires the Oakland Housing Authority to provide economic uplift to the city of Oakland, especially to low-income residents through jobs. Section 3 also requires the Oakland Housing Authority to identify and partner with businesses who have hired low-income residents of the city of Oakland. At this point, I would like to have Rufus Davis, our labor compliance officer, and Nicole Thompson, our acting director of FCP, explain how CCGS and FCP both play a pivotal role in the administration of the Section 3 program. Rufus?
Thank you, Daniel. Good evening, commissioners. Rufus Davis, labor compliance officer for the Oakland Housing Authority since 2012. I'd like to begin the overview of the Section 3 program with a couple of goals that HUD and the Oakland Housing Authority have for the Section 3 program. The first one relates to businesses and contracts. The goal, 3% of the dollar value of the contract awards for qualifying HUD funds should be prioritized for procurement of Section 3 certified businesses. And then on the employment side, Oakland Housing Authority has vendors, contractors, et cetera, who must meet 30% of the total new hires for any type of construction project. Contractors must maintain this percentage throughout the life of the project. And then most importantly, contractors must show documentation of good faith efforts to comply with Section 3 hires. Inez, next slide, please. Okay, I'd like to explain how CCGS and FCP work together to administer the Section 3 program. Next slide. Okay, CCGS's function is the procurement, educating contractors, and then monitoring contractors. And so with that in mind, we make certain that Section 3 requirements are in all of our procurement contract documents. We at CCGS also make certain that contractors are identified and that the Section 3 businesses are notified of procurement opportunities that the Oakland Housing Authority may offer. I try to provide and do provide education about the Section 3 program at all bidders conferences, pre-construction meetings, and if necessary, at weekly construction meetings as well. In collaboration with our partners over at FCP, we assist vendors with questions throughout the answering any questions they may have throughout this entire project process. CCGS performs routine monitoring of vendor compliance with Section 3 requirements, and I also make certain that prevailing wages are paid, and I monitor certified payrolls on a weekly basis. And then finally, contract compliance and support to help vendors achieve Section 3 goals. Every new hire request that a contractor has must be submitted via email to FCP, and FCP then will look in its database to find people it can refer to contractors for job interviews. Next slide. We tell the contractor that if they're performing work on a particular OHA property, that their hiring goals, they must reach out to the residents of OHA who actually live in that community. If they cannot find people in that community who can work on their projects, they then can reach out to the general Oakland Housing Authority population. And then finally, if those efforts are not successful, they are then mandated to reach out to the low-income community residents of Oakland through pre-apprenticeship training programs like Rising Sun Energy, Cypress Mandela Training Center, the Union Hiring Hall, and others. I'm ready to move on to the next slide. Okay. For the fiscal year 2020, which ended on June the 30th, OHA construction contractors hired 227 new people. And they and then of that 227 new hires, 83 were low-income residents of the city of Oakland. We take then that subset of 83, 16 of those 83 low-income residents of Oakland were actual residents of the Oakland Housing Authority. And for those 16 jobs, Oakland Housing Authority residents were six residents were carpenters, seven residents were hired as laborers, two residents, I'm very pleased to announce, were sheet metal workers, and then one was a bricklayer. Next slide. Okay, I want to turn this over to Nicole Thompson, Acting Director of Family and Community Partnerships.
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Nicole Thompson. I'm Acting Director of Family Community Partnerships. We're going to talk about how we partner with CCGS to support the Section 3 program. We currently have a contract with Rising Sun who delivers our pre-apprenticeship training. They offer three cohorts. They have one specific cohort for women because women typically don't join the construction field. They also have a program they offer in the summertime, which is Monday through Friday. And then they also have a program that's offered in the fall, which is evenings and weekends, to allow those folks who have a job to apply for the program and get the training to better their careers. For the Section 3 referrals, like Rufus mentioned, the contractors, they reach out to OHA to look for residents to fill those positions that they have available. So they show their good faith effort. My team screens the residents that we have in our Section 3 list. And if we find someone that has the skills, we refer them over to the job site and then they're placed and hired. We also offer employment support. We provide work clothes, boots, transportation, supportive services. We also do job retention. So some of our families, our participants struggle being on these sites, especially women, because most of this site is male dominated. And so we provide retention support and additional support to the families, to the residents that's employed at these sites. Next slide. Some of the challenges we face is that residents fail to meet the prerequisites for the pre-apprenticeship, which is you have to have a GED or a high school diploma. Some folks don't want to get into the training because it's unpaid. It's a 9-to-12-week training program that they have to complete, and it's full-time work for the most part. Limited residents are interested in construction field because it's hard work, but it pays well. And it's also seasonal work. And most of our residents want to have full-time work all year round. And like I mentioned earlier, this industry is a male-dominated industry, which is why Rising Sun offer one cohort just designated for women. And last, participants must have a valid driver's license and drug free. They have random drug screenings on the sites for our residents and for their workers. That has been a challenge for some of our participants as well. Next slide.
Rufus Davis here once again. You've heard about you've been given an overview by Daniel of the Section 3 program. I've given you some goals and objectives and also some employment numbers for the past fiscal year. Every year, the Open Housing Authority is required to submit some statistics to HUD, and that form is called the 60,002 Annual Report. HUD wants to see statistical information on three different categories. First one was employment opportunities. As I mentioned earlier, there were 227 new hires, 83 of those were Section 3 new hires. And so we had a goal, we actually exceeded our goal of 30% for employment opportunities. We came in with 36.5% this past fiscal year, and so we got a check mark. Construction opportunities, we did not award any construction contracts during fiscal year 2020, so we just got a little bar there. There was just no activity at all. Under non-construction opportunities, though, we had total non-construction contracts awarded. The dollar amount last fiscal year was $3.7 million. Of that $3.7 million, $723,000 or a little more than that was awarded to Section 3 businesses. So earlier I mentioned we had a goal of 3%. Section 3 business participation. In this past fiscal year, we were able to achieve 19.4%. So we got a check mark for that. So these are some good numbers. There's always room for improvement, and I'm confident that with under the direction of our executive director, Patricia Wells, and her administrative staff, they can provide us with the tools necessary to exceed what we have achieved in fiscal year 2020. And for the next slide, Nicole will take us through that.
So what you see here is some of our residents at the work site right now. So we have some that's doing construction work and some that works in the office. Any comments or questions?
Thank you, Daniel, Rufus, and Nicole for that comprehensive education and update on our Section 3 activities. The report will be submitted this week to HUD on time. And as all three of our representatives mentioned, we're working on enhancing the efforts that we do to make sure that the Section 3 dollars give a positive impact to residents and businesses here in the City of Oakland. Chair, that concludes the staff report.
And I thank you very much for a very informative and efficient presentation. That was very, very well done. Thank you. So we'll now move on to item B.
Actually, can I ask a question? This is Commissioner Griffith.
Yes.
I'm curious. I'm assuming that the HUD forms don't ask about, it's simply a question of hiring and not one about retention or about, I'm assuming that HUD is not inquiring about impact so much, but simply just on the initial hiring.
Thank you. Rufus Davis here. You are correct, Commissioner. They asked how many new hires you had. HUD is moving, however, into a different direction. I just got a memo from my supervisor, Daniel Mermelstein, earlier today, saying that HUD in the future will be asking housing authorities to monitor how many hours each of these new hires worked. And so with knowing how many hours they work, we can then determine how fast they're getting from the apprentice level to journey level.
Mm-hmm.
And that means higher wages and the progression of higher wages starting at the apprentice level and then going to journey level wages.
Mm-hmm. My question is really more, I suppose, on the retention from the standpoint of ensuring that residents are not released for a variety of different reasons. Recognizing, you know, all of the points that were raised earlier about some of those challenges and the supports in there, and just I guess it's more of an acknowledgement that perhaps the housing authority's interests are more detailed and involved than what HUD is asking for in its reporting. And I think I'm mostly appreciative that the work that is occurring within the Housing Authority is focused on questions that exceed what the reporting may be limited to.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think I'm going to ask Nicole Thompson to provide a little bit more information for those Section 3 hires that are participants in either the Section 8 program and or public housing portfolios. They do receive additional services to try to aid with retention.
Yeah.
Nicole Thompson, what my staff does is contact the contractor and does follow up. And sometimes the contractor reach out to us and say, hey, this person was late or this person is moving slow. Can you talk to them? And so we're in communication with the contractor to ensure that they stay employed on the project.
Great. I'm glad to hear that. Thanks for that work.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, so I believe we're now moving on to item B.
Thank you, Chair. Item B is also an informational item. It's a presentation on the federal fiscal year 2021 fair market rents published by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development this past August. We thought it would be helpful to provide the commission an understanding of how, when the Housing Authority staff team receives those numbers in August, which are going to be the actual fair market rents as of October 1st, that begins a lot of analytics and planning and assessment on how it will impact those that we currently serve and those that we're working to serve in our future programs. Here to present on this item is the director of our leased housing department, Michelle Hassan. Ms. Hassan.
Good evening, commissioners. Michelle Hassan, director of leased housing. I bring before you an informational item on the fair market rents published by HUD on August the 14th, 2020. For the fiscal year, federal fiscal year 2021. Our FMR area is identified as Oakland through Fremont, California, metro FMR area. The Housing Act of 1937, which was amended in 2016 by the HOTMA regulation, the Housing Opportunities Through Modernization Act, confirms that HUD must publish FMRs no less than annually to be effective on October 1st, 2020. The FMRs become effective unless HUD receives a request for evaluation for a specific area. The importance of the fair market rents are that they determine the maximum payment standard by bedroom size for an assisted family in the Housing Choice Voucher Program and other subsidy programs administered by OHA. It is what OHA uses to determine the maximum contract rent it can offer an owner once rent reasonableness is completed. The FMR for an area is the amount that would be needed to pay the gross rent, the shelter rent plus utilities of privately owned, decent and safe rental housing of modest nature with suitable amenities. Amenities being things such as washer and dryer on site, a fenced yard, if a unit might have AC, hardwood floors, et cetera. HUD notified PHAs that the trim factors it used for the fiscal year 2021 FMRs included updated economic assumptions taking into consideration the effects of COVID-19 pandemic. The fair market rent is the 40th percentile price of rents in the area. Percentiles are closely related to the concept of the medium like an average, and it does control for outliers. For fiscal year 2021, HUD used the U.S. Census Bureau's five-year ACS survey, collected in 2014 and 2018. OHA had the opportunity, of course, to have a survey from 2018 instead utilized for our FMRs. You will see that across all bedroom sizes, the FMRs for fiscal year 2021 published for the Oakland Fremont metro area increased from the amounts published in fiscal year 2020. You'll see that on the table, the differences are anywhere from $107 increase to $189 increase per bedroom size. The authority does have a specific policy around how we would utilize the FMRs. Per the administrative plan, the authority may establish the payment standard anywhere between 90% to 110% of the published FMR for that specific unit size. We do not have to get HUD's approval to establish a payment standard within that basic range. And although the moving to work agreement authorizes the authority to adopt and implement any reasonable policy to establish payment standards that differ from the mandated requirements, the authority has not established its payment standards outside of that basic range for the MTW voucher program. We did, however, receive authority in April 2016 for the VASH vouchers to go up to 125%. There's no action required on this item. You will find the department published fair market rents attached. And that concludes my presentation. If there are any questions.
To the chair, this is Janie. I'd like a question.
Yes, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Hassan. I'm glad that they went up some. And I want, my first question is, does the 125% reflect in the difference here, or is that on top of the new guidelines?
So the additional 25%, if you will, is only for VASH.
Only for VASH vouchers.
We can go up as high as an additional 10% for the voucher program. And it is not reflected on the chart that you see.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I saw recently is our Brooklyn Basin development. I was looking on the website and it looks like a studio starts at $2,300. So I know that this is an average of units across City of Oakland. So of course it may or may not be relevant, but what it tells me is that there's plenty of units in the City of Oakland that our people are not going to be able to rent because they're too expensive from the get-go, which is another good reason we're inside of that project as affordable housing developers. But still, I think that, could you speak to the number of units that are now coming back online because of this 2021 FMR raise? Are people finding more units to rent to?
So what I wanted to just clarify, that new construction within the last 2 years is excluded from the FMRs. And the other thing about Brooklyn Basin, remember Brooklyn Basin has tax credit units that are not subsidized by OHA. So you may see higher units at that project that are not PVV units.
That's true, but what I'm saying, a Section 8 voucher does not cover just a regular search, you know, to like rent a unit because there's still so many out of our price range.
Well, Commissioner, one of the things that I'd like to note is that these particular rents start October 1st, so tomorrow, so they would not necessarily be reflected in the work because it's backwards. But when I introduced the item, I mentioned that we're beginning a lot of assessments, and part of what Ms. Hassan has already had her team working on is how the fair market rents compare to other market platforms which identify the cost of units. And you're spot on that we know that there may be a difference. And so what we'll be coming up with in the next 3 weeks is modeling what we identify as our rent standard to help our participants be as competitive in the market in as many of the wonderful neighborhoods here in Oakland as we can. So so our work begins as of August 14th, and we would concur there will definitely be some units that price above what the average is.
Yeah, that's what I think I'm pointing to, and there's probably lots and lots of them, but no, thank you for this. I appreciate
it. Michelle, can you add a little bit about rent reasonableness?
Sure. So while HUD publishes the fair market rents, OHA always must complete what's called rent reasonableness. And when we do that, we essentially find a range of units that we can offer the owner. And then what we do is we look to see where did we set our payment standard. And so rent reasonableness is always required. An owner might ask, for instance, for $2,500 for a one bedroom. When we do the rent reasonableness, it's going to tell us what we can offer that owner, making sure that we stay within the payment standard that OHA sets.
Commissioner, does that help a little bit? We go through several different steps, again, to try to support both our landlords as well as our participants be as competitive as possible. So stay tuned. We'll be bringing updates.
And I think what we are experiencing is a rental crisis, so they really shouldn't be renting units that expensive. But I understand, and thank you for that.
I have a question. This actually just strikes me as interesting because what I'm observing here is that in spite of COVID, It seems, does this mean the rents are actually still continuing an upward trend?
Ms. Hassan, based upon your assessments?
So what I would say is that I'd like the commissioners to view this solely as HUD's data. Oakland has its own very robust rental market. And as Ms. Wells spoke about, part of what we're doing, Chair, is that we're taking HUD's FMRs, we're reviewing the leasing trends and the open market data to determine how we can support our program. So while HUD has issued these FMRs, we're now looking to see what is really happening in Oakland around rents. Certainly rents have fallen in Oakland over the last year, but that doesn't mean that they've fallen necessarily to HUD's fair market rent level.
Oh, I see. So we haven't really finished that analysis as yet. Is that correct?
Correct. We should have that completed shortly.
I see. Now, are local numbers generally higher or lower than the HUD numbers?
Commissioner, what we're finding is that the numbers seem to be higher in some of the bedroom sizes. We haven't finished our analysis, but we definitely will bring that back to you.
Okay, thank you. And then the final question is I recall that we had gotten approval from HUD for executing more localized adjustments to the fair market rents. So that is still the case. So in other words, we are not locked in to the Oakland Fremont aggregate rent, but we can go by either, I'm not sure whether it was by zip code or by some other measure of locale to be able to assess what the rents were. I'm just clarifying whether that, my question is, are we still able to do that?
So Chair, I'm going to ask Domenica Henderson to speak to that specific issue based on what we did do in 2015 and 26 and how that's applicable today.
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Domenica Henderson. I'm the Director of Planning, Implementation, and Compliance. And Chair, to answer your question, the Housing Authority is part of the Oakland Fremont FMR area. And so our FMRs in Oakland are set at the same levels as cities like in Contra Costa County, and as well as other cities in Alameda County. So we can't separate our FMR levels from those cities. However, HUD typically uses census data from years prior and uses escalators to determine the current fiscal year fair market rents. In the case of the Oakland Fremont FMR area, we submitted a rent study in 2018. And that rent study was basically a survey of recent movers to determine what the rent levels were that those families were paying in comparison to the numbers that HUD generated from their calculation that relies on the old census data. And so right now, the current FMRs that you see for 2021 are based on the data that is included in that rent study. Housing authorities, as Michelle mentioned earlier, housing authorities have the ability to essentially appeal the FMR levels that HUD publishes and conduct their own rent survey if we determine that the FMRs do not reflect accurate market rents. And so we, as a FMR area, can request an appeal and a review of our FMRs should our partner, other PHA partners, join in on that request as well. And so this year, because of the increased number, the increased dollar amount of the 2021 FMRs, we're getting back to the levels that we saw in previous years. And so we don't intend to submit that appeal. But I think once Michelle's team has completed their analysis to determine whether or not we, in fact, have a much higher fair market rent than what's reflected in the current published HUD fair market rent, then we may decide next year to recommend submitting a survey, a rent survey. So right now our data is based on the rent survey.
Okay, excellent. That answers my question perfectly. Thank you very much.
Chair, that concludes our staff report.
Okay, well, thank you. Then if there are no further questions, are there any more questions? If not, we will move on to item C.
I'm very excited to bring item C as it's the first step on our long-term planning, a strategic goal to develop a five-year development plan, but it's one that we're bringing to you today. And it's authorization to modify the authority's land ownership requirement for affordable housing partnerships to allow the authority to negotiate long-term ground leases for sites owned by other public agencies where the land cannot be purchased by the housing authority, contingent on the lease having terms favorable to the housing authority. To present on this item, I'd like to call to the microphone Acting Interim Senior Director of Real Estate Development, Bridget Galka. Ms. Galka?
Good evening. My name is Bridget Galka. I'm the Interim Senior Director of the Office of Real Estate Development. And I wanted to also acknowledge that Michelle Brewer, the authority's real estate attorney at Goldfarb and Lippman, is also on the call if you have questions. So I put together a slide for this. Thank you. So right now, the authority, when we partner with developers to build new affordable housing, the requirement is that the Oakland Housing Authority owns the land and executes a long-term ground lease with the developer. So the developer owns and operates the building, but the authority ground leases the land. And we do that so that the authority is in a position to ensure that the housing remains permanently affordable through ground leasing to affordable housing developers. So through this action, we're asking you to authorize an enhancement to this existing policy in the case where a public agency, such as Oakland Unified School District, Alameda County, BART owns land, and it is their policy not to sell the land. So the authority would enter into a long-term ground lease, anywhere from 75 to 99 years, with the public agency, and then sublease to the developer. This would allow the authority more opportunities to build affordable housing, because right now, we are not able to use public agency-owned land for development partnerships. And it's quite similar in the existing policy when the authority owns the land, it can permanently control the affordability in the housing that is built. And in the enhancement to the policy, in the case of a public agency, it would not necessarily be permanent, but it would be the authority would have a very long control, 75 to 99 years, and would also be in a position, if the public agency ever was to sell the land, to purchase the land from the public agency. So next slide, please. So the rest of the authority's kind of deal terms would remain the same if we modified to also allow us to ground lease from a public agency and then sublease to the developer. And these are the authority's existing deal terms, which is we will provide residual receipt gap financing.
Good job, Bridget.
The developer provides the completion and tax credit and operating guarantees, and the OHA provides a pre-development loan for up to 50% of the project's pre-development expenses. We, on our partnership developments, provide project-based vouchers if we have them available. we maintain the first option to purchase the property after the 15-year tax credit compliance period. And the developer shares in their developer fee with us so that we can cover our administrative costs. So that is my presentation. If you have any questions.
Thank you, Bridget. As we mentioned, this is an action item, and so we are hoping that the commissioners will give us support this evening.
I have a question. This is Janie. So it's very clear what the advantages are, but could you walk us through some of the disadvantages of this just so I get both sides of the story?
Sure. Can we go back to the first slide? So when the authority owns the land, we control the land. When the authority has a long-term ground lease with the public agency, what we're saying is it's subject to the negotiation of favorable terms. So the public agency and the authority would have to negotiate control and approval rights for the authority sublease to the developer. And so that negotiation between the public agency and the OHA of the underlying long-term ground lease does not exist if OHA owns the land. So that's why we are asking that the modification or the enhancement would be subject to the negotiation of favorable terms with the public agency, because those terms are really important in this structure.
And we would do that before we enter into a negotiation.
Right. Right now, we have our terms, and it would be part of the negotiation to ensure that the public agency's ground lease met our terms.
So in terms of process, Commissioner, thank you, Bridget. Those terms that we've identified would be presented to the public agency who currently owns the land. And I'm thinking to help us with any additional cons, I'd like Michelle Brewer to weigh in to address this question. Ms. Brewer?
Yes, are you able to hear?
Yes.
Okay, great, thank you. Yes, just to address that first issue with regard to the term of the lease from the public agency. I'd say that is the first step in this, in implementing the policy, is to start to outline those terms that the Housing Authority will want to see. And one of the ways that the authority can do that and staff can do that is by looking at a similar structure where a public agency has leased land to another public agency who has then subleased it to an affordable housing developer, and to analyze that structure for the things that the authority would like to replicate and the things that the authority would want to do better on. So those terms, those specific terms need to be developed and then negotiated, and then I think they would be brought back to the board. So that's one thing that's different, as Bridget said. And then another thing to keep in mind is that this is a fairly complex structure, and so it may be used in fairly limited circumstances. I think it remains to be seen because it's not a typical structure, but it has been done. There's certainly situations where it has been done. In this case, where you have one public agency not willing to sell its land, and another public agency wanting to have control over affordable housing developed on that land. So this exact situation does exist, but it's not done routinely, and it is a fairly complicated structure. So that's one of the cons, if you will, that has to be worked out, but it can be worthwhile. And once we come up with that structure and the deal terms, it would make it easier to do it the next time.
Thank you for that clarification. So I believe that we are being presented with this policy because this would open up more opportunities for us to build more affordable housing. Will these particular developments, few as they will be, also cost more in the long run?
Bridget?
Is
excuse me, Bridget, before you can I ask all of our participants to please mute your microphone so that we're able to hear the speakers? Thank you so much. Ms. Kalka?
Sure, thank you. I do not think that the public agency involvement necessarily means that the project will be more costly. The authority has worked in partnership on 17 deals, and the projects where the authority has provided more money tend to be a result of the market or the financing not being available. So it's for example, Ave Vista that we developed with Bridge, at that point in time, the state of California did not have any bond funding available for affordable housing. So that particular project, the authority put more funding in than typical. If all of the other sources of affordable housing financing are available, there's no reason to believe that a public agency involvement would mean the authority would be contributing more.
Okay, thank you for that. I relinquish the mic.
Okay, great, thank you. And Commissioner, what I was gonna say is that in the early stages of the negotiation, as deal points are made, one of the things that the real estate development team would look at is still the market for development of affordable units and looking what the estimated development, total development costs would be both per unit as well as total project. So that would be part of the consideration. And with that, that concludes staff report. Again, Chair, this is an action item.
And so that means we need a motion.
So moved, Commissioner Todorich.
I'd like to second, Commissioner Pruitt.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Carries unanimously. Thank you. We're now moving on to item D.
Thank you, Chair. Item D is, again, an action item. It's authorization to execute a memorandum of understanding with Alameda County Healthcare Services and Abode Services, as applicable, to provide long-term services enriched affordable housing to families with children and consent to OPI, contracting with a third-party property management company to operate the housing. This item comes to you in connection with the recent notice of funding opportunity that has made a lot of the news reports on Project Home Case under the state. And while the Housing Authority was not a competitor for the actual direct funds, we have been working intimately with the County of Alameda to figure out a way that we can be part of the ongoing solution for families who have been experiencing homelessness and who also have children in their care. As we present the item, I want to give a shout out and thank you to Bridget Gawka, Michelle Hassan, Dominica Henderson, and their respective teams for the creativity in putting together this proposal. To present the item, which will include some visuals, I again call to the microphone Interim Senior Director of Real Estate Development, Bridget Gawka. Ms. Gawka?
Thank you. Yes, this is an exciting pilot program that the authority has been working on with Abode and Alameda County. Alameda County with Abode and the state of California have been operating Operation Room Key, which is housing for, I'm sorry, let me get my notes. Housing for isolation housing for symptomatic or COVID-19 infected people experiencing homelessness. And they also have Operation Safer Ground, which is safe housing for high-risk people experiencing homelessness. And so when we were looking into HomeKey, one of the parts of HomeKey was the county having a coordinated exit strategy from the interim room key housing. So the Oakland Housing Authority and OPI wanted to pursue a pilot project with Alameda County and Abode to assist 23 of the families with children who are living in Project Room Key interim housing transition into permanent supportive housing. So we are working on a permanent supportive housing pilot, which would be memorialized through a memorandum of understanding whereby the authority would provide project-based rental subsidy to 23 units that are currently leased from OHA to OPI. So these 23 units, six are local program subsidy model, which the authority has MTW authority to use local funds to provide subsidy to units that are not part of the existing HUD project-based voucher program. And then 17 of the units would become supportive housing project-based vouchers, which are conditioned on Alameda County providing access to services to the families. And so OPI would contract with a homeless service provider and property manager to operate 23 units of permanent supportive housing. Abode, who has a current contract with Alameda County, would provide CARES Act funding and ESG funding to establish a transition reserve and also help with project startup costs. Alameda County would, through Abode, provide startup and reserve funding and also would pay for a service provider to provide comprehensive supportive services to the families that would be moving into OPI units that are going to be managed by Housing Consortium of the East Bay. So ultimately, 23 families with children under 18 would be moved out of Project Room Key interim housing into permanent supportive housing that is funded through OHA rental subsidies and managed by Housing Consortium of the East Bay. So OPI will be receiving all of the funding from the various rental subsidy providers and Abode, and then be passing through that funding to Housing Consortium of the East Bay. And OPI will also be holding the program reserves. And if the project needs reserves, they would be coming through the funds that are held by OPI. So that is my presentation.
Thank you. And I would point out, commissioners, that typically under our sponsor-based housing programs, our participation in these type of collaborations across agency lines are not place-based, other than our world-renowned and phenomenal PACT program. So this is another opportunity for the Housing Authority to jump into a place-based initiative with multiple layers of services and partners to make an impact on families. And so with that, Chair, that concludes our staff report.
And thank you. Are there any questions?
This is Janie. I just want to say that the Special Needs Committee did look this over, and we were very happy to move this forward to the full commission. It's doing good work in the community, aligning itself with really good partners, and I'm hoping the my fellow commissioners also approve this. Thank you.
Thank you for that recommendation, Jenny. So given the force of that recommendation, do we have a motion to move forward?
I move approval of the Memorandum of Understanding with Alameda County.
Second motion.
Services.
Moved and seconded.
Second motion by Commissioner Wright.
All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? It carries unanimously. We are going to help more people. So now I believe we are now moving on to the consent agenda.
Thank you, Chair. There are three items on our consent agenda. Item number one, authorization to execute a contract with Dyson Corp Elevator Corporation for elevator equipment service in an amount not to exceed $300,000 for the initial three-year term and $100,000 for each additional one-year option term realized. Item number two, authorization to execute a one-year contract with two one-year option terms for internal audit and process improvement management advisory consulting services with the Bronner Group, LLP, in an amount not to exceed $150,000 per year. Item number three, authorization to renew the property/fire insurance policy and to make a payment of the annual premium in the amount not to exceed $536,282. That concludes the consent agenda.
Do we have a motion, please?
Commissioner Wright, so moved that we be given that the authority be given to conduct the authorization on those three listed under the consent agenda.
I second Commissioner Zheng Li.
Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Consent carries unanimously. Moving on now to item F. I have no speakers. This is people wishing to address the commission. I'm not aware of any speaker cards.
There are none, Chair, and none were submitted at the previous board meeting.
None were submitted. Okay, very good. And that means we're now moving on to written communications.
Thank you, Chair. In our written communications, you have report highlights from each of our reporting departments. Two things of note in family and community partnerships. We were asked a question by, I believe, Commissioner Castillo and Commissioner Zheng Li on how we were assisting homeowners during this time of COVID with the change in interest rates. I'm happy to report that FCP is assisting three of our homeowners who successfully purchased under our program to refinance their homes to reduce their mortgage payments and take advantage of the low historical interest rates. Also under FCP, we have citywide partnerships that with Oakland Unified School District under the shared data agreement, where we were part of an effort to assist 234 families in over 400 students with receiving Chromebooks to support their successful learning during this time of distance learning. And then lastly, through FCP, OHA is referring families without internet service to the Oakland Undivided campaign. In this effort, the families complete a survey and they're able to receive free internet T-Mobile service for two-year hotspots to assist their youth with the use of their Chromebooks. For the Office of Real Estate Development report, if you'll note on our project reports for three of our developments, on page two of the OREB report, 60% of the mechanical, electrical, and plumbing work at Oak Grove North has been completed, and now the contractor is starting on unit finishes. So we are just fired up that we're making such good progress despite COVID and some of the challenges we had with relocating our families at the beginning of the COVID incident. Similarly, with Harrison Towers, we are currently in the procurement process for achieving the procurement of a general contractor. And so we're moving along timely despite the stops and starts of COVID. And then lastly, Brooklyn Basin in phase three. We've got a notice to proceed to allow our general contractor to begin the work. So we're very excited about the progress on that particular phase of the project. That concludes the highlights to the monthly report. Are there any questions from our commissioners?
This is Commissioner Tortorich. On the write-up for Empyrean Towers, there was a comment about the fire department reviews. And I was just curious if that was resolved since writing the report.
Sure, I'll ask.
It has been resolved, thank you.
Good news, thank you.
Thank you, Bridget. If there are no further questions, I'm gonna go into the executive director written comments. You have quite a few items in your board packets. Commissioners, the first is just a staff memo from me to you regarding our research award to implement and evaluate the impact of pilot program X with expert and financial report from the Poverty Action Lab housed at MIT. The award consists of $50,000 and the technical and expert support of three J-PAL researchers. And over the next 12 months, we'll be having some fun as an MTW lab working with these researchers and showing them how stellar the research is here at the Oakland Housing Authority team led by Dominica Henderson. And it's dedicated to designing a project that looks at how supportive services to homeless families impact them. And half of the test population will be physically housed in a project-based voucher site with on-site services that are part of their housing program. The other group, which is known as quote-unquote the control group, will be housed in a traditional model where they're throughout the portfolio of OPI, they're offered the services of staff and resources, but using them is more of an option. It's not connected with the housing program. We did this for our control group to ensure that no family would not have an opportunity to use services if they wish to, but we want to see in this pilot project what the impact will be when the on-site services actually come with the housing itself. So it's more of a shared deal with their housing and lease. And so Dr. Stephanie Hawk, the research associate here at the Housing Authority, wrote the winning grant and my mic went out. Can anyone hear us? Okay, great. Hello, commissioners, can you verify that you're on the call? We had a momentary outage here at the Housing Authority.
Commissioner Wright can hear.
We're good.
We can hear. Okay, yes, awesome. We can hear.
Thank you. Thank you. And so that's I just wanted to highlight that one item in your board packet. Behind that item in your board packet, you have our updated COVID tracking dashboard with our expenditures and action items that we've facilitated as a housing authority using the COVID CARES funds. Behind that is a copy of the advocacy letter we submitted using the NARO Official Advocacy Center. And I know several of the commissioners and many of our staff participated in that campaign. And nationally as a housing authority industry cohort group, we submitted 12,901 letters, which exceeded the goal by 4,000 letters. So thank you all for your participation in that advocacy activity. We also have a marketing for Monarch Homes, a new affordable one-bedroom apartment for seniors. This is also on our website, and we did a outreach using all of our partners on the listserv so that we can get as many seniors as possible on that waiting list. And then lastly is the commissioner meeting schedule calendar for 2020. Other highlights that I want to note from our departments is that we are about to launch a new bidding system and contracts module. The new system will align itself with our strategic goal of customer service and increase speed and effectiveness in our bidding process. And then lastly, Just a few reminders. Number one, tomorrow evening at 9 o'clock Eastern time is an important event. It's the first presidential debate, so I wanted to make sure that everybody in the office on time so you can go home and pay attention to new things happening in the world. The House approved a bipartisan continuing resolution on Tuesday evening, extending government operations until Friday, December 11th. It now moves to the Senate, which is scheduled to vote on the bill tomorrow. We're hoping that the president does sign it. And then lastly, while we continue, as I noted earlier, our advocacy efforts to make sure that funding stays streaming down to each of the communities across the United States to offer relief and help, right now, the cap appears to be at $1.5 trillion, which is about half of what is being recommended through other resources. And then lastly, to close out this evening, I just wanted to honor some of the experts who have been assisting the Housing Authority. First, we have Helen Dunlap of Dunlap and Associates, who assisted with a couple of the items on our agenda this evening from our development community and continues to work with us on the development of our five-year plan. Also joining us this evening is Chris Warren of CVR and Associates. Ms. Warren will be joining the Housing Authority starting next week as the Interim Chief of Program and Finance Administration. I was able to speak with the Management Transition Committee about her expertise and the stellar assistance that she brings with us over the next couple of months while we continue to recruit for that position. So I'm grateful that she was able to join us this evening remotely. We also have our interim general counsel who's been with us over the last year almost, Ms. Jalay Brown, and joining her, I am very delighted to welcome back, the Queen, Ms. Jennifer Bell. Our general counsel is also online this evening and will be assisting us in partnership with Ms. Brown from Goldfarb Lipman along with Michelle Brewer. So we have an incredible triple threat from Goldfarb Lipman. I just wanted to acknowledge their presence here with us this evening. And that concludes my report, Chair.
Thank you. And Jennifer, welcome back.
Amen.
You yes. have been missed.
Okay, so we're. But we want to highlight the fact that Ms. Jalay Brown has definitely been a powerhouse crackerjack on this staff team and our board. So oh, yes. Jennifer, we missed you too.
She has been fantastic, but we've known Jennifer a long time, so we missed her.
Well, thank you, and I just was finally figured out how to unmute myself, so I'm really happy to be back, and I'm really fortunate that Jalay was able to. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm really glad that you were able to be assisted by Jalay in my absence. We're very lucky to have her.
Yes. So
anyway, hi everybody.
Yes, hi.
Hear your voices.
Welcome back, and thank you, Jayla, for all you've done for us in the meantime.
And she'll continue to work with you all. You have a big housing authority, so both the two of us and Michelle, and sometimes other people from our office.
Great.
But I'm just happy to be back. Thank you.
Okay, so now we are going to move on to reports of commission committees.
Thank you, Chair. This is Janie Castillo. I believe at the last meeting we talked about special needs, which hasn't met since then, but will meet soon. We are meeting regularly with our executive director to let our commissioners know that we get regular updates on goals that we laid out earlier this year, and we'll be meeting with her, I think, once every other month or once every 3 months regularly, and we'll have a better report next time. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. We also had a meeting of the transition committee, where we were updated on progress within the executive office, and we also have an upcoming review that the committee will be working on, and then presenting information from that to the entire board, because I believe we're supposed to be doing that within the next couple of months. It's coming up actually quite soon. So now, next item is announcements by commissioners.
Chair, did we also have a meeting of the development committee where we discussed the ground lease issue that we just voted on today?
Oh, that's right, we did. I'd forgotten about that because the last meeting had been canceled. Yes, we did indeed do that. Would you like to comment on the summary of that?
No, I think we just, the action that we took related to ground leases really was the primary point of discussion, and I'm happy to see the committee, the work brought forward.
Yes, that's exactly right. And the conclusion that we came to, or the message that we received, is that the two alternatives of a long-term lease with a public agency versus owning the land, if everything is done properly, are close enough that it's really not a significant enough difference for us to not move forward with a long-term ground lease. So in the opinion of the committee, that we'd represent a very reasonable course, particularly since it's going to be providing more housing. And the particular incident, I mean, the particular site that we were looking at is a transit village. Okay, so now announcements by commissioners. Hearing none, I believe our next item is adjournment at 7:15. Not bad, team.
I will move for adjournment.
I second motion.
All right, we are hereby adjourned. And thank you all very much. A fine meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you.